So we ask the question and then something happens. We, you know, we get closer to each other, or sometimes we actually do the opposite. We offend someone, but something happens. Things will not be the same after the question has been asked as they were before. So that's what I mean, that if we want change, we want to make room, we need to make room for people to ask questions, because that's where they can learn and grow and connect with each other.
You've just heard Pia Lauritsen, and this is Create Belonging. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Create Belonging. My name is Matteo Bornico, and this is a podcast where we explore the world through the lens of belonging. Now, let me ask you a question. Have you ever noticed that the question mark is shaped like a hook? And that's exactly it. Questions hook us. They hook our attention. Our attention that these days tends to be in short supply. An attention that is scattered and fickle. So in case you haven't guessed, this episode is all about questions. And I couldn't think of a better person to have this interview with than Pia Lauritsen, PhD. Pia is a philosopher and a world-renowned expert on questions. Pia is someone that advocates for questions in a society that tends to value answers. And now you may be asking, and rightfully so, how is talking about questions relate to our journey into Create Belonging? Now, this is a great question, of course. And you may have heard me speak about how curiosity is one of the keys to unlocking belonging for ourselves and for others. So in order to explore curiosity, we need to, of course, explore questions. And if we're going to explore questions, then I'm going to find an expert that could help us see questions in a new light. And this is exactly what happened. As Pia states in the opening clip, when we make room for questions, it allows us to learn, grow, and connect with each other. And this aligns perfectly with one of the missions of this podcast, and that is to help us learn, grow, and connect with each other. And you may also be asking yourself, who is Pia Lauritsen? Pia is a TEDx speaker, an author of 5 books. She is the founder of Quest and Question Jam. She is a Danish philosopher who received her PhD in philosophy in 2012 from Aarhus University. And she is soon to publish a book on the John Hopkins University Press. And she's also in the process of writing a book that she's very excited about that we'll hear more on the interview. And most importantly, Pia is somebody who has thought really deeply about the nature of questions, about their power, and even about their magic. Now, this was a very rich conversation where we cover a wide range of topics. I'm going to list some of them, hopefully to get you curious enough to listen to the end, because it gets better and better with every minute that passes. For example, we talk about why questions are the gateway to new possibilities. We look into Pia's backstory and questions, and the difference between playing for a team's questions versus team answers. We explore Pia's response to not belonging, and how not belonging is really an illusion, and it's just a matter of forgetting that we already belong. We cover why we experience existential anxiety and feelings of not belonging, and that is just part of being human. We talk about how organizations and society at large are designed to accommodate what we know instead of embracing questions. We talk about Pia's books, and she also gives us a new answer, one that she has never given before, to the question, how does one ask better questions? Now, we covered a lot more in this interview, and now I'm getting the feeling that I'm making this longer than it has to. So let's just get right on it. So are you ready? It's my pleasure now to bring you the amazing Pia Lauritzen. Welcome to Create Belonging, Pia. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Matteo. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you are an expert on questions, and it is a bit daunting to ask somebody who's an expert in questions more questions. So I wanted to start off with one of the things I think I've heard you say, which is there is no change without questions. So no questions equals no change. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? What does that mean to you?
It means that every time we want to learn something or connect with someone or figure out different ways of navigating our reality, our teams, our organizations, we start out by having some kind of doubt or curiosity, or there's something we're not sure of. And that's why we ask the question. So we ask the question, and then something happens. We get closer to each other, or sometimes we actually do the opposite. We offend someone, but something happens. Things will not be the same after the question has been asked as they were before. So that's what I mean, that if we want change, we want to make room, we need to make room for people to ask questions, because that's where they can learn and grow and connect with each other.
It's almost like a question is a portal to a different reality, because you say that there's a threshold that we're crossing with every question. Mm. That's an amazing way of looking at questions. And of course, we ask questions every day. I'm very curious, and we will talk about curiosity later on, but we tend to ask a lot of questions. My question to you now is, what makes a question a great question?
So I can answer that question in different ways. One way is that we actually, at some point, because I've been working with collecting questions for 2 decades, so I actually have a lot of data on what questions people are asking. And at some point, we've realized that some questions make the respondent say, that's a great question. And that naturally made us curious to find out, so what is it about a question that makes the respondent say, that's a great question, or that's an interesting question? Or I think we all know that sometimes we say that, and we can have different reasons for doing that. Sometimes it's to buy ourselves time, or it's to tell the people asking the question, well, this I haven't thought about, and it's interesting, I want to give it some time, I want to prepare you that now I'm putting some reflection time into answering this question. But what we could see is that from the answers, that when people say that's a good question, they actually did spend more time and put in more words in answering the question. So it seemed like that a great question, or at least a question that makes people say that's a great question, is one that makes them reflect and explore new paths of thinking. So it's a way of digging into aspects of their own experience, their own reality, that they haven't explored in that way before. And I actually think it's very data driven and it's very scientific, but it relates very much to how I experience it myself. You know, when someone asks me a question that I consider a great question, it's something that makes me curious. It's something that makes me ask questions myself. You know, why haven't I thought about this before? What does this mean? And does it make a difference that it's this question and not another question? You know, so when a question makes the responding curious to ask questions of herself or himself, then something is happening. Does it make sense?
Yeah, there is a very reflective aspect to a good question, that it's not only about getting the answer, but it's the process of going deeper inside you to get that answer, if that answer is available. But just every time we're going a little bit deeper to self-exploration, I think, with every answer, I think.
Yeah, and it's also about accepting that maybe the most important thing is not the answer. You know, when we're talking about questions, we tend to want to get to the answer as quickly as possible. Typically, when people ask me what's a great question, what they really mean is, how do I ask questions that will lead to great answers? So can you help me do that? Can you help me make sure that the questions I'm asking actually gives me the information or the insight that I want? And I'm trying to turn this around and say, well, that's not asking questions on the premise of questions. That's asking questions on the premise of the answer. But maybe the main purpose of questions, at least that's what some philosophers would say, maybe the main purpose of questions is not to reach an answer as quickly as possible. And it's definitely not to reach an answer that you already know you want. It's to open up a space where people can find out new things together. That would be, you know, a great question. The questions that are actually making room for people to reflect together. And there's a reason for that. It's because we are meant to be in a giant conversation, right? We are meant to constantly seek out ways where we can learn from each other and we can exchange experiences where we can move forward. So I think of it as a dance or a dialogue, you know, depending on where you want to go with it.
I love that. I love the example of dance. So let's dance a little bit more. I think we're just getting warmed up, I think. So I wanted to we covered that you're a philosopher, and but I wanted to ask you a little bit about some of the earlier questions that you've had all along that led you to become a questioner, per se. So can you tell me what your backstory is, or how were you? What led you to be curious about questions and to eventually even do a PhD on this?
I cannot remember a time when I was not having conversations with myself about some of what I didn't know, but I now know are the fundamental questions of human beings. So existential questions, ethical questions, and epistemological questions. So the big questions about who am I? How do I know who I am? Who can help me figure this out? What am I supposed to do? Where am I supposed to go? You know, it's true for all of us. You know, we've always asked these questions, but some of us, I think, we just notice, whoa, I'm asking a lot of questions here. What's going on with these questions? And I'm not quite sure what makes some of us curious about the questions and spend time with the questions. And what does it, some of us are saying, well, I just need to find the answers as soon as possible. Okay, so that's who I am. That's what I'm supposed to do. Okay, now I'm going to do it. I'm going to take that education. I'm going to make that career. I'm going to, you know, go with the answers. But I think there is a fundamental decision at some point in every human being's life that is, you know, what team do I want to play on? Do I want to play on team question or team answers? You know both of the teams are there. My life will be full with both questions and answers. But there is a decision to make whether I'm going to feel comfortable with not knowing and with the uncertainty and with the doubt, or whether I'm going to fight it my entire life, you know, as soon as possible, getting over it. Okay, so I'm not sure about this, but now I am. So I having doubts about that. Well, now I don't anymore. So I don't know this. Well, I will read, I will do my studies, and now I know. So now I don't have that problem anymore. It's very different ways of being in the world. But I didn't know that, you know, growing up, it didn't feel like a choice. It just felt like, well, they are haunting me, these questions. When I wake up, when I go to sleep, when, you know, when I'm going to parties with my friends, when I was a bit older, when I was having boyfriends, they just kept being there. And then at some point it felt like, I think they have something to tell me, these questions. I think there might be a reason. I think I'm supposed to listen, and I think I'm supposed to find out what is it about these questions. And then when I started doing research, both on a PhD and on a postdoctoral level, on the nature and impact of questions, I realized, wow, this is magic. And I'm so happy that I realized that there is so much more to questions than the answers they paved the way for. They certainly deserve a lifetime, at least from my point of view, and hopefully other people as well will be studying the power of questions and being comfortable having more questions than answers, because I think that is what we're supposed to have.
I couldn't agree more. I think if we're on team answers and we expect to always find the answers, we even stop asking questions just for that. And that's not anywhere that we want to be. In fact, I've in my own research about belonging, and I discovered that curiosity is one of the gateways to finding your belonging. And I believe that the path to finding your belonging is through asking questions. So it's so wonderful that we get to cover this topic. And one of the questions I tend to ask my guest, because everybody has some sort of relationship with belonging, because we've all at some point felt it, if not constantly. One of the reasons I have this podcast is I want everybody to feel like they belong, even in those moments that they don't. So my question is, can you recall a time that you felt like you didn't belong? And what was that experience like for you?
I wouldn't say that. It's not like anything pops up. I don't think I... it's not like I always feel I belong. I don't think that. But I think I have a basic belief that we were born to belong. We did belong, you know, from the very beginning. We're made of the same stuff, you know, as the world around us. We have bodies like the animals, and, you know, so we do belong. We are part of this world, and we have a role to play. So when we don't feel we belong, it's because we need to be reminded. It's not because we don't. it's simply because we are in a situation where for some reasons we've lost touch with our belonging. And that's not, you know, it's not my research area, it's yours. But thinking about it, I have a feeling that without putting this into words before like that, that's how I've always felt. It's kind of like, well, if I don't feel I belong, it's not like I don't belong per se. It's just I need to be reminded somehow where and how and when and with whom I belong. So it hasn't felt like something, I think it hasn't felt like a big issue. And, you know, and at the same time, it's kind of part of being human that we have this anxiety, existential anxiety of being in between, of being lost, you know, of being not belonging, you know, nobody is like me. Where are you guys? Why are you not like me? You're everywhere else. So it's an interesting, I think, from a philosophical point of view, at least, it's a really interesting aspect of being human that we belong, we were born to belong, and at the same time, we constantly faced with the fact that, but we don't, nobody's like me. I'm all alone. I was born into this world having a mother, but you know, then immediately she was taking away from me. I have my own body. I have my own perspective. I have my own. So that makes us constantly have this feeling that we're all alone, and that doesn't feel like belonging, right? So it's a paradox.
I often find myself listening to these conversations, and I would listen and I spot a need to hit pause, to interrupt the flow, and for a good reason. Now, I was completely blown away by Pia's response here. Her and I did not discuss the work of Sebine Selassie before, and yet her answer echoes very closely what Sebine has talked about, the fundamental truth of belonging, that we already belong. She talks about how we are fundamentally wired and built for belonging. And also, she mentioned that the feeling of not belonging is rooted in forgetting this truth. And sometimes all she needs to get back to her belonging is to remind herself. And also, the second part of her answer speaks about the relative truth of belonging and how we're all different, we're all individuals, and how we are all experiencing different aspects of this same reality. And so once again, this podcast, we are introduced to the paradox of belonging. This was not planned, and I'm so glad for Pia and her wisdom and sharing that with us. And so that's why I wanted to interrupt it, just because I see a very strong connection and I could not let it go by unnoticed. Okay, so in this second part of the conversation, we continue discussing the role that questions have on societal change. When we pick up the conversation, Pia is actually answering a question about her opinion on focusing solely on curiosity and why she prefers talking about questions instead. Okay, let's get back to it.
That's why I like working with questions and not, understand me correctly, not just curiosity, because curiosity is a member of a very big family conceived of questions, you know? So questions is kind of like, she's the mother of them all. And we tend to forget that if we just talk about curiosity, we can just talk about the positive stuff. But working with questions, we're confronted with, now we have to deal with all the uncertainty and doubt and ignorance and stuff like that. So I think we have created a world for ourselves where all the structures in our organizations, companies, our societies, I kind of like built to support what we know. We were taught that knowledge is power. You know, we have designed everything around what we know. We have not designed a society around what we don't know. Scientists know that that's what drives science. Philosophers know that there would be nothing without questions. But the politicians and decision makers and journalists and, you know, all the structures driving our societies are kind of taught that it's what they know that's important. It's not what they don't know. It's what they can do that's important. It's not what they cannot do yet. So I think that's been going on for a couple of centuries. And I think that's a huge reason why more and more people are feeling uncomfortable being curious, are feeling uncomfortable sharing their doubts.
So it is I guess it's today's value, society's values more predictability, safety, comfort. So,
the idea that that is possible. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Do you think we have arrived at a place that we need to shift that those values, or maybe reevaluate our values so that we can maybe swing more towards the embrace more the discomfort, embrace more questions, and that would help society progress and evolve in some sense?
I think it's already happening. I think that the development of technology has, for so many years, we have failed to ask a lot of important questions. We have failed to ask what happens when we turn nature into an unlimited resource that we can just use. And we have failed to ask how does it impact human beings to be surrounded by technology all the time and being surrounded by algorithms that, you know, and a tech industry that just wants to have all our attention and have us spend all our time on this technology. We have, for decades, we have neglected to ask these questions. But what is happening right now, and it's actually extremely interesting times from my perspective as a philosopher, is that times are changing. Right now, even the most front-running tech engineers and tech wizards are asking questions about the impact of technology and of AI that's extremely interesting to be, you know, witnessing, to see that everyone right now is asking questions that we should have asked decades ago, but well, better now than ever, right? And that is the shift that we're seeing. And what I think is important for us right now is not to think that we can address these questions in the same way that we were addressing the questions that led to AI or led to the technological development. You know, the existential, ethical, and epistemological questions I was mentioning before, the three big E's, I love to call them because it makes it easier for my head to remember what's this all about. But these questions are questions that can never be answered by a bot. These are questions that no one can answer for us. We need to find our own answers to the questions, who am I? Why am I here? What am I supposed to do? Stuff like that. How do I take care of the world I'm part of? These questions we have to find a way to deal with. And they cannot be answered like all the questions that led to AI. So right now, what's really crucial for us to make this development into, or to take this shift, to make this shift into a more, I would say, sustainable way of navigating, we need to pay a lot of attention to how we deal with the questions and not just how we find the answer to the questions, but how do we actually make room for the questions to be with us long enough for us to be influenced by the questions and to actually feel, this is on me. This cannot be outsourced to a bot. This cannot be outsourced to an executive assistant. This cannot be outsourced to the politicians. You know, I need to make this about me. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. But we need to pay attention. You know, it's tempting to do what we used to do with all the other questions.
Yeah, and to echo what you were saying earlier, we need to have the awareness to know what is the quality of the question that we're asking.
Yes.
And it's that awareness, I think, that leads to a little bit of the work that you have been doing. Then, so what are you working on at the moment?
Yes.
Yeah.
So right now I am extremely energized by writing a new book. I have one book coming out in September. So that's, I think it's within the next 2 weeks. I have a book called Questions coming out on Johns Hopkins University Press. I'm very excited about that. But the thing is, when, you know, it's always the next book that's most exciting, right? Because now I'm done with this one. Now all I have to do is wait and hope that people will enjoy it. But the next one I'm extremely excited about, because it's for the first time I'm writing a book where I'm really just doing what I think needs to be done with the research I've done, you know, with the knowledge I have, with the experience I have. I've been, you know, spending some time trying to figure out what would be the good way of telling this story. And I'm so excited about, I really want it to be a conversation. So inspired, of course, by Plato and others who have really taken this dialectic point of view seriously, saying instead of writing a monologue, telling you what I know about questions, I'm writing a dialogue, you know, having people, having two fictional characters engage in a conversation about important topics such as technology, leadership, education, and simply having them, based on all the data I have and all the research, you know, in philosophy, having them exchange questions and answers about what it means to be human and what it means to be human in a tech-obsessed world. And that's extremely fun to write it also, you know, feeling like a fictional author while being just, you know, an academic. But it's really joyful.
I think also we're living in some times where a lot of academics have realized that they can no longer just publish academic papers, that the real value of all the work that they're doing, which it, many times it has been thankless for many years. I think now they're realizing, no, we need to appeal to the masses. We need to get the book out to the greater public. There is benefit in the work that they're doing. So I commemorate you for doing that work and for writing that book.
But you should also know, Matteo, and people should know that it's not just to get your own work out that you're doing that. It's also because your thinking is different when you write differently. And the input, you know, now you and I, we met on LinkedIn. Input I get from LinkedIn is, it has so much value, you know, and that's why I do it. It's not to share, this is what I know. It's to say, this is where I am right now. Where are you guys? And then you tell me, and then I can do something different with what I'm doing than I otherwise would be able to do. And I think, and I hope that more and more researchers and academic think about it that way, you know, that the thinking becomes better by being in conversation with the people.
And I'm happy to contribute to like your prompts, your posts. Sometimes I catch myself wanting to answer it right away, and then I remember who you are, and I say, well, no, this requires a little bit more. So I sit on it for a little bit, and then I I give what I think is a coherent answer, and you write back, of course, and it's been really nice and engaging. I really have come to love asking questions and also pausing and asking a deeper question. And I think you're part of that reason why I have been slowing down when it comes to my questions. So thank you. Thank you for that.
It's interesting you say slowing down with the questions, because talking with you is actually a really nice exercise in slowing down, I think, you know, in a really good way, because I tend to be over eager, you know, that I want to tell so many things, and I really still do, but because you are so calm, then, and that's really nice.
Thank you so much. That's what I try to do. So I wanted to maybe get a little bit more practical in the last bit. Mm-hmm. And how can somebody ask better questions?
I think the first step in asking better questions is not to focus that much on asking good questions. I actually think it is to trust that whatever question that comes to you when having a conversation, when listening to another human being, when being present at that moment with these people, that that will be good questions. And they don't have to be great to do, you know, they can be doing what they're supposed to do without being great. So we don't have, I think we should be careful not to put too much pressure on the questions. Questions are fragile, you know, they are little creatures, you know, they have a lot of power and can do a lot of damage. They can do a lot of good, but they are small suggestions, small attempts to reach something that hasn't been reached before. So we have to be gentle with them. You know, we don't have to put too much pressure on them. Oh, you have to be good. You have to be great. You have to be big, or you have to be right. No, my questions don't have to be that. They can be who they are, and they can, you know, they're welcome to be here. And so are your questions. So I think the first step in asking better questions is simply to make room for whatever questions want to be asked.
I love that. Yeah, I think that's pretty much the, we could also get into how do we listen better and some other practical things around questions, but perhaps we'll leave that for another time. So my final question to you is, are there any questions that you would have hoped that I asked, or is there anything you would like to ask my audience about?
I didn't have any hopes of what questions you wanted to ask. Not at all. I actually, based on the conversations we had earlier, I have felt fully confident that you would know what questions would be nice for us to discuss. And they certainly were. I always have, you know, when joining a conversation, I hope that we will talk about something that I care about in a way I haven't talked about it before. And that's exactly what happened. So thanks to your questions and thanks to your way of hosting this conversation and this podcast, I really feel that I spent an hour in the best possible way.
Pia, thank you so much for that. Yeah, and of course, we will have show notes with your books where people can get in touch with you. Please, if you haven't connected to Pia on LinkedIn, please go ahead. And I think, I just want to thank you for making the time, and thank you for being somebody who helps others find their belonging through questions. And until next time.
Thank you, Mateo.
And so there you have it. That was my interview with the philosopher Pia Lauritsen. I want once again to thank you for tuning in. I also want to thank Pia for her time, her wisdom, and patience. Now, it took me a little bit longer to get this episode out, but I'm so glad I did. And this is probably the part where I summarize and give you my perspective. But given that this was an episode on questions, I'm going to leave you with some questions that hopefully you'll find a way to get back to me. Of course, there are many ways to get in touch with me. My name is Mateo Bornico, and I'm quite certain I'm the only Mateo Bornico in this world. My email is createbelonging, all spelled together, @gmail.com. You can find Create Belonging on LinkedIn. And I do have a website, createbelonging.com, which definitely needs a facelift. And again, please don't hesitate to reach out. I tend to answer to all my emails. And so the questions I have for you are, what did you think of this episode? Did you wish that this conversation would have gone a different way? And if so, which way? Has this episode changed the way you look at questions? So please go ahead and get in touch with me. And I want to ask you to go create belonging for yourself and for others. Until next time. Bye.